Beyond Brunel, talking about the future of infrastructure in the Southwest from the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership, supported by ICE Southwest.
Welcome back to Beyond Brunel. In this episode, we're talking about one of the most innovative infrastructure developments in the Southwest. It is, of course, hydrogen. But are we ready? And what does the development of this technology mean for infrastructure in the region? I'm joined today by David Eccles, Director of Hydrogen Southwest, and Steph Jari, Deputy Director of Western Gateway. David, the World Economic Forum says that hydrogen is the simplest and the most abundant element in the universe. So why is it so difficult to come by?
There are real challenges in the production of hydrogen and the transport, storage and use. All of them are technically achievable. All those barriers can be overcome. It's a question, frankly, of making it commercially viable.
And the National Grid asks something which I'm sure we're all thinking. Why is a colourless gas given so many colourful terms?
That's a very good question. I think it's to keep it simple. If I take the left and right of arc, if you like, left of arc is what we might call black or grey hydrogen. Hydrogen, when it is being produced, the energy required for that actually generates CO2 and emissions into the atmosphere and so on. That's the worst case. On the best case, on the other end of the spectrum, you've got green hydrogen, which uses low carbon, renewable energy traditionally in the production of hydrogen, and therefore it is a net beneficiary rather than a net contributor of more emissions.
And Steph, let's hone in on the Southwest then. Some say it's a natural powerhouse. We've got an abundance of renewable potential in the region, and of course that extends to the Severn Estuary and so on as well. So what opportunities lie ahead for us in terms of hydrogen?
It's a really good answer, and I think the quickest one I can give is that complete ecosystem. David referred to green hydrogen, and I think if you want to get serious about hydrogen and where that fits in the whole energy balance, green hydrogen is what you need to be producing. That means you need abundant green energy, which is either going to be wind, either onshore or offshore, solar, or you're going to need some sort of tidal energy, all of which we have in abundance in and around the Southwest and into South Wales.
And David, let's just pick up that point on green hydrogen then. So green hydrogen specifically, what processes are involved?
In order to make hydrogen, there are several ways, but the most common and the simplest is the electrolysis of water. That's whereby you're using electricity to separate the hydrogen and the oxygen in water in order to vent off or capture the oxygen and then produce the hydrogen that you need. And the power that's required for that electrolysis process needs to come from somewhere. And as Steph says, the best way of doing that is with renewables.
So green hydrogen feels like the way to go. Massive potential in the Southwest. Steph, how is the region developing the infrastructure needed to leverage hydrogen?
One of the key things is around the infrastructure that you build. So hydrogen, you need to produce it. So you're looking at, as David said, the equipment you need for high-scale electrolysis. You need the green energy production that you can put nearby to make that electrolysis easier. You then need to transport and store hydrogen. And storing a colourless gas that is famously very light and likes to escape is not easy. So storage solutions are going to be really important in terms of the infrastructure. There are a good number of companies actually starting to do this. And we have solutions ranging from underground storage of hydrogen in sort of natural caverns that you coat. You've got canister storage, but you're also looking at things like, if I could introduce Wales, the Highline. So a system whereby you can actually pipe hydrogen across the country to get it to where it's needed.
And some of that thinking is already in play, isn't it, David? I think I'm right in thinking that Bristol, for instance, is gearing up for distribution. Is that correct?
There are a number of schemes underway at the moment. There's a bid being made for government funding to support a project down in Exeter, which is all around the production and use of hydrogen for various transport and industrial purposes and close to Exeter Airport down in Exeter. Up in Bristol, as you say, there's a lot of advanced thinking there as well. A number of companies are coming together to decarbonize the industry in and around Avonmouth. And as part of that, produce hydrogen that can be used in research and development and critically in aerospace. Because for the Southwest, aerospace is the driver economically. And that is very much driving the thinking in relation to the future uses of hydrogen in the region.
And Steph, you mentioned some of the challenges around safely and practically transporting hydrogen in large quantities. I guess there's this sort of underlying understanding at the minute. It seems that hydrogen isn't scaling at a pace fast enough to deliver on its potential. So what more can we do?
I think one of the things is this perception barrier. People immediately think hydrogen, they think unsafe, despite the fact, you know, it is one of the most abundant elements in the universe. Showing people how you can use and transport hydrogen very safely, I think, is one of the key points. We have got businesses in and around the Southwest and South Wales who are doing this. So production of hydrogen is happening. There are multiple sites that are producing hydrogen, storing hydrogen and transporting hydrogen. Quite a fun application is there are cars that you can actually get now and drive and use that are hydrogen powered, which is really important actually for some of the key communities in and around the Southwest and South Wales. I think another one that's important is looking at the kinds of mixes that you can use. So hydrogen in a pure form is one thing, but you can also mix hydrogen to make it easier to transport and easier to get in around the infrastructure that already exists in energy. Research into doing that is really important. I'm a co-chair on something called GW Shift, which is a program that covers Exeter, Bath, Cardiff, Newport universities. And that is really looking at creating this supercluster of hydrogen research into quick application so that we can build the technology and the infrastructure ready to scale hydrogen.
Steph's absolutely right. That's how we're tackling the issue and trying to move forward. It's important to understand the difference in our regions from other parts of the United Kingdom. So if you take Tyne Tees or Humberside or the Northwest, I mean, there are very energy hungry, intensive industries that require lots of energy and need to replace their fossil fuels at scale and quickly. And they can therefore produce hydrogen at large scale because they have a need and therefore a business case. In the Southwest, not so much South Wales, which is one of those industrial clusters, but in the Southwest of England, there is not the concentration of heavy industry. Therefore, we need to look at it in a different way. And we need this distributed system of nodes, hydrogen hubs, if you like, that are growing up, coalescing around demand, and then over time will join up to find to create a network and an ecosystem.
So if I'm right in understanding that, it's more about capitalizing on the exportation of hydrogen from the region to others.
Well, that is a possibility for sure, that we could be a net generator of hydrogen and a net exporter of hydrogen, possibly, particularly when you look at the opportunities around the floating offshore wind possibilities in the Celtic Seas project. The vast amount of energy is there. 16 gigawatts, I think, is predicted. A lot of that energy could be used in production of hydrogen, which could be exported. But no, we're in the short to medium term, I think we're looking at how we can service our own needs for hydrogen in the short term and medium term by local production.
And David, is diversity in the way that we produce hydrogen important for our energy mix, our energy security, or is it a case of putting all of our eggs in one basket and opting for green hydrogen as the cleanest?
It would be naive to think that we can all simply step through to green hydrogen immediately. There will need to be a transition through the other forms of hydrogen production in order to create the market and create the end users who will then in turn be comfortable with hydrogen coming from green energy at scale. That's in the country as a whole. In the Southwest, of course, that's not the case. Because our requirements are relatively modest in the short term, we can start with green hydrogen because we're doing it at small scale in local production to service local needs as a start point. So I think in our region, we perhaps can, we wouldn't want to exclude everything, but we can probably make a large bet on green hydrogen as a start point.
And Steph, presumably all of this means opportunities for job creation.
It absolutely does. And because you can look at this as consistent skills across energy production, you're also looking at very similar needs across multiple builds of an infrastructure around energy transmission and storage. These are all cross-transferable, so they present a really nicely knit community that can build these networks out. So it will depend on the demand. It will depend on how quickly we can go, but estimates, you know, range somewhere around 70 to 150,000 jobs, you're looking at a lift of anywhere between, say, £5 to £15 billion in terms of gross value add to the region. I think one of the most important things for me, though, is energy security, a huge switch to more locally produced things. We all know that green energy is the way to go to battle the climate crisis, but it's also not that reliable. What hydrogen does is give you a different thing in the mix but it also gives you a way of storing things that isn't a reliance on huge, massive giga batteries that can take up enormous amounts of space and are not always as efficient as you might like in storing the power. So when you get into hydrogen in the mix, yes, you've got end use cases like transportation. David's absolutely right. Aviation is absolutely crucial here. But you're also looking at storage and things that can help us balance the grid so that green energy does not mean unreliable energy. Instead, we can balance things out so that you have real energy security for the UK. And the Southwest is, I think, going to be absolutely integral to the UK for that.
Steph is absolutely bang on there. It's really important to see that hydrogen is not operating in isolation. These are all complementary technologies that can reinforce each other. So when there's power being produced out on the offshore wind platforms and it's not needed on land, well, how do you store that power? Perhaps create hydrogen. And so this is all about thinking not so much about moving hydrogen, moving electricity. It's all about moving energy. And that's what we all need to be thinking. It's a much more joined up perspective. And government is beginning to get move in that direction and set up an agency that is looking across all those disciplines.
When you look at the infrastructure you need, that think hydrogen approach really matters, because you can look at an infrastructure build and perhaps if you're building something, I don't know, let's just say you're building a factory, and you will automatically start thinking, well, can I put a wind turbine up there? Do I fit solar panels? There may be a bit of you going, okay, while they're producing, that's fine, but we know that we have some issues with grid connectivity. Perhaps as infrastructure builders, you can be thinking, is there another way of storing this? Is there an ability to put some sort of hydrogen electrolysis plant here that will then give me an immediate storage and an extra use case? Thinking hydrogen isn't about becoming an expert in hydrogen electrolysis or technology. I think it's about thinking of energy mixes. If you are going to build something, anything, how do you power that? Nearly everything we do these days requires power. And are there different ways of thinking about that that aren't necessarily straight into grid connectivity? You're looking at private lines, and then you're looking at the energy mix that you might be able to use instead of immediately going to grid connectivity and then more traditional energy types.
And Steph, I suppose just to go back on that point, when I think of hydrogen, I tend to group it in the same group as tidal energy, in the sense that there's huge consenting challenges. You've spoken there about grid connectivity, cost, of course, also. And so is it more to do with our perception of hydrogen and these different types of energy? Because, you know, I suppose we hear a lot about solar, we hear a lot about floating offshore wind. And so is it more so understanding in the way it's sold to consumers?
Definitely. It wasn't that long ago that if you spoke to people in the industry and you told them that wind energy would be absolutely part of our mix, they probably would have told you, no, it's never going to be natural gas and coal-fired power stations. It's absolutely a huge part of our energy capacity. And let's be clear, the South West and South Wales together already produce around 6% of the energy capacity of the UK. We're already doing a lot of this. Hydrogen just gives us an extra string to our bow. It allows us to do more, to store more. Perception around hydrogen necessarily is quite difficult. It's often portrayed as this difficult or expensive thing. There are two, for me, key points in that. One is that it takes electricity if you're using electrolysis to make hydrogen, which can be counterintuitive. And the other one, I think, is that safety aspect. If you think about hydrogen as that, what you do when your green energy isn't needed, it becomes a way of not wasting. And it's a different mindset. Perceptually, in terms of safety, if you think about hydrogen as well in a greater mix, if you split water, one bit hydrogen, one bit oxygen, you're also producing oxygen. Hospitals need lots of oxygen. So again, you've got a use case there where one of your waste products is something that you absolutely need and require. So again, hydrogen allows you to think about these complex ecosystems where you get much less waste. And that's why I agree with David wholeheartedly. You shouldn't be thinking just about green hydrogen. To get into your colour mix, Chris, the purple hydrogen, hydrogen that you create from nuclear power, the Southwest has got Hinkley Point C that creates massive heat. You can definitely convert that and then use some of that to create hydrogen if you want. Again, it just gives you this added string to the bow. So the heat's going to be there anyway. Why waste it? Why not use it for other things? And with climate crisis and energy security, not wasting things becomes possibly the most important thing we can do for the grid.
Beyond Brunel, talking about the future of infrastructure in the Southwest. From the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership. supported by ICE Southwest. Search for us on LinkedIn.
Let's look at some of those different types of hydrogen, given that you've mentioned the rainbow there. So we've got grey hydrogen, blue hydrogen, green hydrogen, black hydrogen, pink hydrogen, turquoise hydrogen, yellow hydrogen, and I think you mentioned there, Steph, purple hydrogen. But of course, I suppose the consistent theme is that all of these different types of hydrogen, they're involving processes such as electrolysis, and you mentioned nuclear power. Presumably that could involve small modular reactors as well, carbon capture and so on. So this touches a lot of different industries and a lot of different people, doesn't it, David? And so
absolutely.
A huge opportunity to capitalize, even if we are not necessarily producing hydrogen in the most environmentally friendly way. There's certainly opportunities to tackle that through the supply chain and through these processes.
Absolutely. And this has been recognized for a while. I mean, there was a number of important reports. I take, for example, the Chris Skidmore MP's report that he produced into the opportunities around the economic opportunities that were associated with this energy transformation agenda, of which hydrogen is a part. And I think both Steph and I have emphasized that hydrogen is but a part, a component of it. But in all of these complementary systems, there are huge opportunities around skills, which we've touched on, and supply chain. Real opportunities for businesses across the region and across the country to take a lead in this and capitalize economically on the energy transformation. Oh, and by the way, we're doing our bit to try and save the planet. So, you know, when you put these two together, it's a really powerful argument.
It feels as though there's a real piece around education here, reaching out to politicians, reaching out to partners, and indeed, probably reaching out to the public.
Absolutely. Yeah, because often people think of hydrogen and their minds immediately turn to Hindenburg 1937 and the explosion of that airship, which is completely fallacious, given modern safety systems and regimes and so on. And I'll just give you a really good, I think it's a good example. Neither of you two will remember, but I remember the days when passengers had to disembark from aircraft before they were refueled with Jet A1 fuel. Nowadays, people happily sit on their plane whilst a bowser comes up and they plug in a hose and it's filled with jet fuel, because the safety considerations are so well understood and the risks have been mitigated to such a tiny, tiny level that people are comfortable with it. The same can happen with hydrogen. But as you've touched on, Chris, we need a big education campaign across all policymakers, stakeholders, and the general public in order so that people can understand that this is only going to be done if every single agency, health and safety executive, the Civil Aviation Authority, and all of the other regulators are entirely satisfied that it's being done in the safest way possible.
It's an intriguing point, because risk from a human perspective is always quite funny. We've got large proportions of the population that live on fault lines in the earth or volcanoes, and they think nothing of it. And yet that is an absolute guaranteed certainty that those things will happen and there will be disaster as a result. And yet we're fine with it. And then you look at something that's man-made and a bit different, and very naturally humans immediately go, oh, that can't be safe. So I think it's about perception of risk, but it is also about trying to get things in a simpler language. Sometimes, as I say, I mean, GW Shift is an academic-led program, an opportunity for things to create the ecosystem, to really create this hydrogen cluster in and around the Southwest. But even then, we can get into quite complicated debates about nuances of hydrogen technology and application. And I think before we can get into those nuances of debate, we need to lift ourselves up a bit and tell the story more simply to people. It's a gas, it's abundant, it's safe, we can contain it. Yes, it is reactive, it's a chemical element, but there's so many chemical elements out there that are reactive. It's no more dangerous than any of those. And if you take the right measures and precautions, you've got something that is very safe to work with. I was very happy to accept a lift off my friend Chris Boxall in his hydrogen car. It's just something about, I think, familiarity and getting used to it. And I think the people in industry can really help that by keeping the debate simple. I think we overcomplicate things rather more than we need to. It's pretty simple. It is there. It's a gas, can't be a liquid. It has dangers, but we know them and therefore we can manage them. I'd be a lot more worried if this was something where people were being quite blasé about the danger, and they're absolutely not. This is something that is well understood.
And David, do you think the abundance of other clean energy sources in the Southwest presents a challenge for us? What I mean by that is, are there too many competing requirements, competing voices, fights for grants and investment and so on?
No, absolutely not. I would see it completely the other way around. I'd see them as being complementary. The renewable sector in the Southwest is incredibly strong, as we've touched on already, and we need all of those and more, and they can complement hydrogen, because as we've discussed, you can store energy as hydrogen, you can use hydrogen in certain applications, it's not suitable for others. It's going to be getting the right balance between them. And as I said right at the very beginning, the essence of all of this is technically possible. You know, it has been for 100, 150 years. The trick is to make it commercially viable, for which we're going to need government support, not just in terms of squillions of pounds in subsidies, although we will need some subsidies to help bridge the gap in terms of cost, for example, around diesel, as they did with photovoltaic panels, you know, and then the cost came down and the subsidies disappeared. So we will need some subsidy. But what we require from government is certainty and a framework within which all of these activities can take place. And if you get that certainty and that framework and those business models, then they can complement each other and we can move forward.
On that basis then, Steph, how realistic is it to suggest that we'll be using hydrogen commercially in the Southwest by 2050?
I think that's entirely realistic. It depends what your application is and at what scale, but I think you could definitely say that now. There is something very specific about the Southwest in terms of the challenges it faces. A very particular use case, just to narrow in, you know, 19% of CO2 produced from domestic transport is in sort of long-range, heavy-duty haulage. Trying to use an EV network around the Southwest, given the distances we have to travel and the difficulty with getting connections for EV points, it's difficult. Hydrogen, on the other hand, much easier to transport, much easier to contain, far less disruptive to the landscape in terms of you can literally port it, place it. You don't have to run everything underground all the time. So there are very particular reasons for using hydrogen in and around the Southwest. And that is why, if you look at the Southwest and its hydrogen uptake, I feel it's probably going to be faster than some other parts that have less challenges than us in that respect. Again, infrastructure can really help because you only need certain refueling points with hydrogen rather than a huge network of EV. So again, horses for courses.
And coming back to your question, Chris, you know, by 2050, I'd say sooner, by 2030. I mean, we've got the Langage project down in Plymouth. They were involved in the first round of the hydrogen allocation round and secured government funding. You know, assuming all goes well there, they'll be producing and using hydrogen in the next couple of years. And there are other projects across the region that will be doing the same. And of course, there's lots going on in South Wales, as we've touched on. So I can see it happening much more quickly. And I'll give you a really good use case example. At the moment, vans that have a heavy duty cycle that are used by utility companies and those sorts of things, Wessex Water, Wales and West Utilities, you know, that have to tow trailers or have onboard compressors. I mean, batteries cannot simply provide the power and the torque and the duration of power that are required in order to meet the needs of those vehicles. About 20% of the fleets will need to be another fuel other than battery electric. They could well be hydrogen. That is the next most obvious thought. So if you've got that, if you've got thousands of heavy duty vans using hydrogen, that's going to become quite quickly, not least because new petrol and diesel vans, as you know, are going to be banned from 2035. And already companies are having to make decisions about fleet replacement.
Steph, you've mentioned HyHaul as a case study a few times. Please, can you explain what that is?
HyHaul is a project that was put together with the Department for Transport and Innovate UK money. It's also being done with companies in South Wales, particularly Protium and Marubeni Europower Limited. And essentially it is looking at the M4 corridor across Wales and into England using the long distance and HGV vans and then looking at refueling them in hydrogen. So basically to prove the point that if you are doing long distance, heavy duty usage or literally heavy loads, hydrogen is a viable alternative and that we can build the refueling stations necessary to actually give you a network that these vans and lorries can utilise. It's really forward thinking. It is going to create refueling stations across the M4 corridor by 2026 with a goal to deploy over 300 vans by 2030.
David, there's clearly some really strong arguments for hydrogen, particularly when compared to electric vehicles and so on. I just wonder who's responsible for really spreading the word, getting that message out there?
Well, it's all of us. You, me, Steph, everybody. We've all got a responsibility for explaining the opportunities to industry, to academia, to local authorities and to government. And if you get those three groupings together, academia, industry and government and local regional government working together effectively and keeping it simple, as Steph was saying, using simple language, explaining it to businesses for opportunities, for academia for the opportunities it offers them and the contribution they can make, and then to local authorities, again, the opportunities for them and their responsibilities towards climate change and so on, you can get a really powerful grouping that will drive the agenda forward.
So encouraging signs certainly on the horizon and some really encouraging pieces of policy being put into practice. But how do we incentivize early adopters and indeed investors in the region? Is it through case studies, David, or is it through practical applications? How do we do that?
I think that's a really important question. To my mind, the way of solving this is to incentivize the end users. Because if you incentivize the end users to take, for example, for, as quoted, the utility companies using their vans for their heavy duty operations, if you can incentivize them to take up hydrogen as the alternative to fossil fuel by closing the gap between the price of hydrogen, which is a lot more at the moment, and the cost of diesel, if you can close that gap with government subsidy and therefore stimulate demand, then the rest of it will follow. Because the OEMs, the manufacturers of the vehicles, Ford, Stellantis, will produce right-hand drive hydrogen vehicles. The hydrogen developers will come in, create the plants because they will see a demand at the end of the pipeline, literally, to give them a return on their investment. And the investment will come in because there are commercial opportunities that are worth investing in. You know, you speak to anybody on the financial side and they say there is money to invest for the right projects with the right degree of certainty. There is money to go. So government using its leverage to stimulate demand at the bottom, at the end user, will make the whole chain join together.
And in terms of costs, David, how do we quantify the costs in terms of hydrogen? Is it through a strike price? And how does it compare to other renewables?
Well, it really depends on the scale, because if you can do this thing at scale, then costs come down, of course. And that's why at the moment, hydrogen is much more expensive than diesel. You can't deny that fact. But you need to close the gap through, I would say, a tapering subsidy like we had with solar PV. You know, that's how the industry got going, because the end users were subsidized initially and then that tapered away until it was able to stand on its own feet because it was being done at scale. And that's the trick.
You may also be looking at more regional approaches. So the increased devolution agenda could be a real help here. So if you look at regional pricing structures for energy that is produced and used closer to where it is, again, because you haven't got the huge costs of transmission, transportation, you can make things actually much more viable. I don't disagree with anything David said. You've got to create the demand. You've also got to give them the surety, because surety is a key to investment. You don't invest unless you're daring, and there are those out there that are daring, but you don't tend to invest in things that are very uncertain, very shaky. You're looking to be at the rising curve of technology. A environment where the policy and the legislation is more certain allows people to get that going. And then industry will do the rest. If I look at aerospace, you know, we've been talking about land transport. Airbus, for example, which is a huge firm here in the Southwest, is looking at creating a hydrogen-able plane 2030, 2035. I think they'll probably be able to do it. Again, the only way that becomes commercially viable, though, is if we can produce hydrogen at the scale they need and they have an environment in which that is normal and they have got the subsidies or indeed the leeway to do that. So the business out there is ready. The infrastructure is getting there. It needs to go further, faster, but everybody just needs that surety that will enable them to sort of go a bit like the sound of that starting pistol. And I think in the Southwest, we should probably take that starting pistol as having been heard and get on with it. Because if we keep waiting for somebody else to do it, we'll get overtaken.
Yeah. One of the things we should also mention in connection with that is planning certainty as well, because the reforms to the planning, now that is where local authorities and regional authorities can really help here by having a supportive planning environment. We know that the planning structures are going to be adjusted at national level, but you need a supportive local authority to get behind a business and to say, right, how can we enable this? Not what are the reasons to say no? And that way, developers will have the confidence to be able to invest and get these production sites up and running.
Steph, David, as a final question, what role does the public have to play in all of this? How can they help? David, perhaps we can turn to you first.
I think the general public is really behind renewable energy in the broadest sense, the energy transformation. They are supportive of a green energy transformation. And what we've got to do is provide them the information to give them reassurance and certainty. And in relation to the factors that we've touched on earlier, energy security, price and safety, if we can give them that information, I think the general public will do the work for us by putting the pressure on the system to make it happen. And we will enable that.
And I would just say simply demand better. Sometimes elements of society treat the general public as if they are foolish. They're not. Give them simple, evidence-based arguments and they will decide. I think the best we can do is involve the public where we have something that, for example, an electrolysis area that wants to be built locally. Engage with the public and don't treat them like fools. Talk to them openly about the positives, talk to them about the risks and how you're going to mitigate it. When you have got a general public that is bought in and being treated like adults and partners in the conversation, you're far more likely to get their support.
And on that, our listeners will notice that we haven't spelled out each of the different types of hydrogen, how they're produced and so on. I will leave that to our listeners to go away and investigate. So a bit of homework. So a huge thanks to David Eccles from Hydrogen Southwest and Steph Jari of Western Gateway. Please join me again for another episode of Beyond Brunel.
You've been listening to Beyond Brunel from the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership, supported by ICE Southwest. Search for us on LinkedIn. Beyond Brunel is presented by Christopher Ackland, a Fresh Air Studios production.